It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are running hot and crew aboard the SS Trump-tanic on this Trump-tanic Tuesday, the third day of December 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll always find us on the interweb tube. That's your one-stop shop for podcasting. All the podcasting stuff is back up and running nicely now. It's been recrawled by Google, and everything works again. That's wonderful. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you very, very kindly. And so if you want to go to HeadOn.live, we try to support just about any kind of podcasting you want to use. If there's not one, shoot me a note, and I'll send it along to Brother Deacon Asa, and he'll make sure things work with that as well. Also, at HeadOn.live, of course, the ubiquitous chat room tab. If you've never been in the chat room before, by all means, click on it. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in, and the conversation will be, well, merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, and extravaganza-like. Yes, early arrivers will greet you. That would be Jimmy and Squeaky and Terry and Saigon, all waiting there, Just waiting to see you. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, has declined to fold space today. Because, well, it's just not a good space-folding day. We've had a couple of days of snow here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cold Trump, Virginia. But the roads are clear. It's nippy, but not unbearable. It's a tolerable 57 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. What are you looking at me that way for, baby?
Because it's cold. It's not frozen. I can't let it go, okay?
Okay, yeah. She's not.
No.
And she may be a Viking warrior princess, but She's the, you know,
There's a reason we migrated.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason your ancients said, screw this, and left the frozen north and went to this far sunnier climes of, say, France. We come from France. Yes. Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks to everybody who helped meet the challenge yesterday evening so that we could begin by meeting Bruce's memorial challenge. Thank you very kindly. Wet left us at $200 this evening. But hey, wow! Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Jill, very kindly. Jill just knocked out half of this evening's fundraising, so that leaves $100 to go this evening to keep up with fundraising for the month of December. We're early in it. And program reminder, program note. Beginning next Monday, which would be, the 9th of December, beginning Monday, the 9th of December, the program live start time drops back by 1 hour. Okay, this does not matter to people who listen to the podcast, but it does for those members of the live contingent, the listen live contingent of the community. So if you're in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, the program will begin at 5, starting the 9th, next Monday. It'll start at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That, of course, is 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And, well, hopefully it won't be too much of an imposition. But that's where that stands. Now, let's see. What's that? I'm just checking Twitter real quick. Oh, yeah. Never mind. Steve from Georgistan says the time change will be a positive move. Well, I hope it will be.
It's only for a limited time only.
Yeah, it's for a limited time. Yeah. Thank you to Steve in New York. Steve is willing to kick in $15 if somebody will do the $15 in front of him, and that'll take us down to only $70 to go to finish this evening of the third day of December, fundraising-wise. So thank you, Steve. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you very kindly as well to Bernice. Bernice just signed up over at Patreon. Thank you very kindly, Bernice. Bernice has been a long-time PayPal subscriber and just shifted over to Patreon instead. Thank you, Bernice. Let's see, what else? I know I'm missing something, but Agnes came back here to change the propane bottle out.
And tell everybody how much I appreciate them.
Yes, and tell everybody how much she appreciates them.
I love you all.
Did you hear that? She loves you all. It's nice to be loved by Agnes, because you don't want to be not loved by Agnes.
I can hear you.
Well, I'm talking out loud. I mean,
jeez.
So right. Thanks go out. This program always begins with gratitude. Thanks go out to our subscribers for the third day of the month. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Forgot about that part. Thank you very kindly to Gene and Ann across the pond, there in merry old Engeland, where they have the dubious dishonor of having Nitwit Nero on their ground at this point. That would be Nitwit Nero, who I've never met. Prince Andrew, who is that? I don't know. And of course, as usual, he's lying like a cheap rug. Because there are lots of photos, or there are photos of Nitwit Nero, fondly hanging out. Associating with Prince Andrew, whose problems just keep getting worse because he's a disgusting royal pervert. But anyway, I interrupted the thank yous. Thank you to Gene and Ann. Thank you to Janice. Thank you to Stephen. And thank you very kindly to John. Those are our subscribers for the third day of the month. Thank you very kindly indeed. All right. Let's see. What's that, Flavio? Flavio says, France. Unless you live in the Côte d'Azur, the rest of France is cloudy 300 days out of 365 days a year. How do I know? I lived and studied there 1988 to 1989. Yeah, but it's not. It may be cloudy. It may even be rainy, Flavio. But it is not frozen solid. Just let's take it as read that part of the reason that the Norse people, the Vikings, went seafaring was just to look for some place that wasn't so goddamn cold. And I understand that. I understand that line of thinking. And by the way, at the beginning of the program, we say a fond farewell. Many of you will recall the conversations that I had with Edward in Dallas. Edward's calls were always a joy. He was born in North Carolina. He was an erudite and merry, jolly fellow. And he even called to share with us when, back a few years back, he and his beloved Lee were able to leave Dallas, drive over to Albuquerque, or somewhere in New Mexico, I think. Maybe not Albuquerque, but drove to New Mexico and got married, having been together for decades. Well, I had a note from Lee today letting me know that Edward had passed away peacefully in his sleep about a month back. Edward was 82. And if you recall his conversations, the stories he told of his family from back in the day were an absolute joyful delight. It seems that many of us in this community come from a family history of what are often referred to, or were once often referred to, as characters. And Edward had a cast of them whose stories he would share from time to time. One of the funniest jokes, because I go in for simple humor and occasionally simple dirty humor, I remember the night that Edward told us the story of the little boy who had gone to school. The teacher asked them to all write a poem. I hope I don't ruin this. And the poem that little Johnny came up with was along the lines of, "Here I sit out in the hall, watching a cockroach crawl up the wall." And the teacher, of course, called him down and said, "Little Johnny, we don't use such words as cock in polite society. Now, go outside and see if you can do it a little bit better." Edward told this much better than I ever did, or ever will. The teacher called little Johnny back and said, "Have you tried to make the poem better?" And he said, yes, ma'am, I have. And she said, "Well, let's hear it." He said, "Here I sit out in the hall watching a roach crawl up the wall without a cock." Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if we were using the cowbell back in the heyday of Edward's calls, but Edward gets a cowbell for that. So, Lee, I know you're bereft, and I can only hope that the joy of his memory, and on behalf of the entire community, that the joy of his memory will bring surcease of sorrow. He will be missed. And that was Edward in Dallas, 82 years old. Missed indeed. Stephen, New York, subject line, revised challenge. In memory of Edward, I'd like to change my challenge to a $16.40 challenge. That's 8.20 times 2 for Edward's 82 years. So it's $16.40 on the table in memory of Edward in Dallas. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly for letting me know. Randy in PA says, "You're hot on all 5 horn streams, Bob." That's a beautiful thing. And I know for a fact, based on some messages coming in, that Edward has been on other people's minds as well. He's been on, because see, if we hear from you either by email or calls or whatever, and then we don't hear from you anymore, we fret. Tracy and I were talking about that a little bit last night. How, you know, if we don't hear from you a little bit, we worry. So, yeah. Thank you, Steve. Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room, moderating alongside Sparky, says, "Happy trails, friend Edward." Indeed. Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Maybe that will help. Steve from Georgia Stan says, "Randy Rhodes' show is over at 5 p.m. Eastern, and there's nothing on progressive talk-wise between 5 and 6. So maybe we will fill that little gap. And, of course, that's 4 to 7 Central, 3 to 6 Mountain, like I said, 2 to 5. Pacific. All right, so here we go. Off and running for this Trump-tanic Tuesday. And it's one of those sort of where to begin kind of situations, because it's been rather a big day. You know, last night we were discussing the fact that we'd had a couple of revelations, a couple of big deals happen. The court ruling in the McGahn case, turning down, refusing the DOJ's disingenuous request for a stay of execution of the subpoena. And that, coupled with the revelations from Mueller's notes having been released, gives you a pretty good... what it is that things are picking up speed now. And you can tell by virtue of the harried, frenzied responses of that... intellectually damaged individual in the White House. Well, thank you, Lady B. Lady B says, "You are breathtaking. Great joke. And Edward, rest in beautiful, incredible peace. And Lee, live blessed. You both will see each other again." Thank you, Lady B. Thank you. And in point of fact, Lady B had a note earlier today that I thought very well worth the sharing. Lady B said, "You've got a ton of shit to cover today." And that was yesterday. And pointing out a story from The Guardian, Melanoma's new book. Did you know Melanoma had a new book? Well, Melanoma's new book says that she suspects Roger Stone was behind the nude photo leak. And Lady B says, "Notice the name in the story. That's not the lurid past life of the first wife of the first black president of the United States. Americans would not have stood for such unbelievably inappropriate behavior from the wife of the leader of the free world. We also wouldn't tolerate men who cheat on their wives or support people who would enable those who are pedophiles. We want our leaders to represent the best of America in their dress, manner, and personal behavior. If you think racism had nothing to do with electing Trump, you need to up your Thorazine dosage." Indeed. And that there's another account out of that book, not that you'll spend money on it, why would you? No, the Republican National Committee and various weirdo white wing maggot front groups will instead buy it in bulk to try to run it up the bestseller list like they did Junior's little pamphlet. Because, of course, they will. Remembering Edward, Brother Deacon Asa says, yeah, or that time back in 08 when Edward said, in reference to Sarah Palin, if I have to see that woman Sarah Lou Succumcilly, I'm going to have to puke. The only reason those greasy old white men follow her around is because they know she can suck the nails out of a 2x4. Oh, God, I'd forgotten that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Edward, you are well remembered. Indeed. Lady B also said, under the subject line, irrefutable evidence that Trump and his rich sociopathic enablers are no good, corrupt, lying sacks of shit who wish to see this country burnt to ashes, and the Republican Party is completely irredeemably complicit. We will have impeachment hearings. Let's replace the lazy, ambivalent, average Americans' regular TV shows with these hearings. You want to watch a bunch of people bitch and moan, if not tune out altogether? This isn't the 1970s where TVs aren't as plentiful and the World Wide Web was just technology being worked on by skinny, chain-smoking MIT grads with acne and Asperger's. Damn, Lady B. She always brings the A game. Lady B says, we don't have to accept reality as it is. We'd rather take pills and smoke dabs, dress in costumes, and make endless shows about aliens and superheroes, all the while desperate to believe the world bends to our will. We don't like reality. That's not what we pay for. We want our wars to be resolved in either 60 or 90 minutes, goddammit, and we want a hero that is troubled, yes, but is in fantastic shape with perfect white teeth. And don't forget the Warren Zevon line, Lady B. Yeah, this is, I'm just testing your Mickle DJ powers. Fantastic shape with perfect white teeth. His hair was perfect. Right. Oh my God, Lady B says, have we got it coming? And I'm at a loss to describe just how deep this shit's going to go. How do you redeem a country that has slowly become irredeemable? How do we fix ourselves in the eyes of the world? The world knows our power is only as good as the people who wield it. And right now, that's a bunch of billionaires who, along with packing the courts with sycophants, destroying the environment, and dismantling our social safety net, can't decide if they're going to give their employees a Christmas bonus or lay them off on December 31st. Hell, why not both, says Lady B. It'll never be over. We'll slap a bandage on it and continue, but we will never be the envy of the world again. Our feet are made of clay. We're just like the rest of them. Forgive my cynicism. I'm a winter baby. Nobody does pessimism better than a child who never had an outdoor birthday party as a kid. Ain't that the damn truth? I'm one of them, too. On the other hand, to quote Lyndon Johnson, yesterday is not ours to recover, but tomorrow is ours to win or lose. Grab the pitchforks and torches. This will be the best cosplay convention yet. Won't it just? Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very kindly for jumping in. That's about a third of Steve's challenge being met. So that leaves about $11.40 on Steve's challenge. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very kindly. And Billable Rick awarding a posthumous cowbell for Edward's comment about Sarah Palin's sucking ability. Yeah, I should have. If only we'd had that cowbell back in 2008. Mercy. But here we are. And by here, I mean, you know, in this little handbasket and wondering why it keeps getting warmer. But we're not the only ones. Along the way, just to sort of keep things in perspective, two less names in the Democratic presidential field. One of them, Steve Bullock. Well, it just wasn't his time. The Montana governor pulled out of the presidential race today. But more or less surprisingly, Kamala Harris. And most of the coverage that I've read today cites the fact that she started off with a big bang and a lot of energy and then fizzled. And there's a lot of why and the usual hand-wringing and pearl-clutching. But I picked up on a couple of little rumors in the last few days that might also explain why she got out. And that is the fact that people are talking about mounting a Senate challenge against her in California. And they think that a couple of them in particular might have enough oomph to unseat her. One of them being Tom Steyer. So maybe it wasn't just about not having a way forward, and she said she didn't. But also because she couldn't get any traction. Not in Iowa and not in South Carolina. And the one that has the pundit class scratching their heads the most, and there's some inherent bias at work subsurface on this, because I've heard it on more than one occasion. Well, why aren't Kamala Harris and Cory Booker getting any traction in South Carolina? And I, of course, think I have the answer. Your mileage may vary. But it goes back to what I've been saying all along about South Carolina and why do we let South Carolina determine who's viable this early in a primary season? The assumption in the previous question being, hey, Cory Booker's black, Kamala Harris is black, lots of people in South Carolina are black, why aren't they just lining up behind the black candidates? Well, South Carolina's black population is given pride of place in the Democratic nominating process, not because South Carolina's African-American populace is representative of the wider African-American experience, for lack of a better word, in the United States, but precisely because it isn't. And some of the South Carolina members of the Horn Family Community Congregation have given me an amen on this. Black or white, South Carolinians are some of the most conservative people in the country. As I pointed out, you've got a strong African-American, diverse demographic in places like Illinois and Maryland, but they can't guarantee that the candidate with the most conservative bona fides will be at the top of the heap. Conservative Democrats in South Carolina can. And, you know, maybe it's meteorological, too. After having to wage a caucus campaign in Iowa and a primary campaign in New Hampshire, maybe it's a little bit of a gift to let the candidates then go to South Carolina, where it's significantly more pleasant in February than it is in, say, New Hampshire. I think we've got to take that as a possibility. But for the most part, yeah, Kamala Harris didn't catch on. Cory Booker didn't catch on in South Carolina because their brand of politics for black or white people is not the brand of politics that South Carolinians gravitate toward. So I think Kamala Harris is a fine senator. And I hope she will continue to well represent the people of California. After all, she has the responsibility of representing tens of millions of Californians as compared to, say, Joe Manchin, who represents about a million or so West Virginians. It's just the reality. So she won't be on the next debate stage. Steve Bullock never really made it onto the debate stage. But we've still got Andrew Yang out there, and we've still got Marianne Williamson. Marianne won't make the next debate stage, but Andrew Yang probably will. And that does not bode well. It just doesn't. Oh, thank you. Thank you to Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you. That means that with Tracy wiping out the remainder of Steve's challenge, we are now down to $60. $59. $59 to go to finish off fundraising for the evening. $59 this early in the program is quite stunning. Thank you. Thank you one and all. I renew my thesis. It's only going to keep getting weirder. Today, a member of the state legislature down in Texas, a fellow by the name of Rick Miller, decided that he didn't want to run for being a member of the House of Representatives in the Texas House anymore. He represents a little hunk of Houston and Sugar Land, Texas. He had previously achieved a certain degree of infamy because, well, he introduced an anti-LGBTQ bill, and his gay son spoke out against it and against him. He didn't learn anything from it because he made himself infamous again this week, according to the Houston Chronicle. Talking about a pair of Republicans, you know, members of his own party, named Leonard Chan and J.C. Jetton. They're both running against him in the primary. And speaking of Jetton, who is a seventh-generation Texan, by the way, and the chair of the Fort Bend, Texas GOP, Miller said, he's a Korean. He's decided because he's an Asian that my district might need an Asian to win. And that's kind of racist in my mind, but anyway, that's not necessary, at least not yet. And Chan's probably running for the same reason. I don't know. I never met the guy. I have no idea who he is. He's not been around Republican channels at all, but he's an Asian. This then caused Governor Greg Abbott to say, hey, y'all, I just want to let you know, back when I endorsed Miller, I'm unendorsing him. This caused Miller to then say, in trying to make a point about the campaign, I used a poor choice of words that are not indicative of my character or heart. My comments were not made with malice, nor do they reflect who I am or who I strive to be. I want to publicly apologize to J.C., Leonard, and my constituents and friends who have put their trust in me through the years. I don't know why I'm making him sound like Ross Perot, but it just works. I do not want to be a distraction for my party or my constituents, and therefore I've decided not to seek re-election. And so this is kind of cool. It means that that district, the 26th House district in Texas, may become a viable possibility that the Democrats could pick up a seat. They can't help themselves, can they? I mean, you'd like to think they can, but they can't. And so the House report on impeachment came out today. And I browsed it. I did not thoroughly digest it and scan it for the part to find the parts that were in iambic pentameter or anything. But it's pretty damn interesting. For instance, Devin Nunes is now a fact witness. You know, when you're a lawyer, you're never supposed to put yourself in a position where you can become a witness in your own cause, because the rules say a lawyer shall not be a witness in his own cause or her own cause. And yet, there's Devin. Moo, y'all. Moo. Well, the question then becomes, what of a potential juror in an impeachment trial? That's a question that Ron Johnson, who comes from Wisconsin, he works in the lumber mills there. He walks down the street and all the people he meets, they say, "Hey, what's your name?" And he says, "My name is Ron Johnson. I live in Wisconsin. I work in the lumber mills there." No. He's the senator who, of course, got his own ass handed to him by Hillary Clinton a couple of years back. And he's Atne Ute Aitbrei, if you one what I in may. Not the sharpest rolling pin in the drawer. But he's a potential juror in the impeachment trial if we get a bill of impeachment. It's not a foregone conclusion. And he's a witness, too, now. Because it was May the 23rd when Ron Johnson got together with Senator Rick Goodhair Perry and Gordo Sondland and Ambassador Kurt Volker and the comb-over Caligula himself. And they had a little confab about Ukraine and the new president thereof. On August 30, Gordo had a conversation with Ron Johnson. And Johnson said he was worried on August 30th about the fact that Nitwit Nero was holding up aid, desperately needed aid to Ukraine. That's when Sondland replied that if Ukraine would commit to get to the bottom of what happened in 2016, if President Trump has that confidence, then he'll release the military spending. So Ron Johnson is actually a fact witness to the bribe. And then on August 31st, Johnson talked to Nitwit Nero again. And Nitwit Nero, the only thing he was capable of was saying, "No quid pro quo, no quid pro quo, no quid pro quo." But he would not tell Ron Johnson that he, Johnson, could tell the people in Ukraine that the aid was on the way. So, how do you handle that? Under any just circumstance, Ron Johnson, being a fact witness, would remove himself from the jury pool or the jury panel. There's no pool. They all get to be jurors. Or if there was anything resembling morals or ethics or, adherence to constitutional oaths remaining in Senate Republicans, they would look at Ron Johnson and say, "Sorry, you don't get to be a juror because you're a witness." Now, if you think that's going to happen, well, you don't think that's going to happen. You know better. The House impeachment report is easily obtained. And if you want something a little light reading for later in the day, well, that ain't it. But it is damned interesting. Hey, thank you very kindly to Clarence down in South Carolina, Stan. That puts us down to $49. $49 to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Clarence. Yeah, what's that? Ron and Raleigh says, help us, Obab Kenobi. Did you hear that another 7 federal judges are being pushed through the confirmation process today? That makes 159 judges that this doughy pant load has inflicted on the people that we'll have to deal with for decades after Trump is moldering in the grave. Yeah, I saw that. And it makes all the more urgent the understanding that the presidential election isn't all that matters. We got to have the Senate. And again, I will encourage that we all dare to dream. Wouldn't it be grand to have 67 votes in the Senate? It could happen. Now, that would mean we'd have to have 69 Democrats, because you'd still have to account for Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, who are just as likely to mugwump along with the Republicans as they are to vote vote for the good of America and honor their constitutional oath. Oh, and this is the one, probably this subject more than any other, and that's saying something, because there's a lot of info there in the impeachment report that bears deep scrutiny. But Michael Isikoff over at Yahoo News noted the fact that, as we have said here on this program for months now, Mike Pencilneck Geek, the Vice President of the United States, is in the Ukraine filth up to his helmet-like hair. The House impeachment report notes that Pence... Well, let's just read from the report, shall we? Our investigation determined that this telephone call was neither the start nor the end of President Trump's efforts to bend U.S. foreign policy for his personal gain. Rather, it was a dramatic crescendo within a months-long campaign driven by President Trump, in which senior U.S. officials, including the Vice President, the Secretary of State, the Acting Chief of Staff, the Secretary of Energy, and others, were either knowledgeable of or active participants in an effort to extract from a foreign nation the personal political benefits sought by the president. The call record alone, the report notes, is stark evidence of misconduct. But that business about determining that Mike Pence was in it up to his helmet hair is important. Because I will say again, there is no Office of Legal Counsel guidance that says that the Vice President of the United States may not be charged with a crime while sitting in office. I suspect that Adam Schiff and others truly have gone all queen to queens level 3 on Trump. And they're sitting there at the checkerboard while Schiff has a 3-level chessboard in front of him. Ponder it for a moment. The charge would be bribery. Or extortion. Or accessory to. I don't know if there's anybody in the Justice Department that would be allowed to do that. Or how you would sort out the jurisdiction for it, whether it would be the DOJ in charge of stuff in D.C. or, well, I really don't know. I don't know the legal answer to that. But if, in fact, this is a conspiracy to commit a crime, well, one of the elements of conspiracy is that after the conspiracy has been entered into, one of, not all of them, not half of them, not two-thirds of them, one member of the conspiracy has to take a substantial step in furtherance of the conspiracy. Nitwit Nero took steps. Mulvaney took steps. Sondland took steps. There were enough steps there for a square dance. Alleman right indeed. But it's conceivable. Maybe we're in million to one territory, but it is conceivable that before that somewhere in this process, Mike Pencil Neck Geek could find himself getting all indicted. Wonder how Jesus would think about that. And I mentioned Devin Nunez. It's downright ugly for him. And by the way, Flavio had presented us last night, and I didn't get to it, with a fun fact about Devin Nunez. And this comes from, Flavio has a sort of personal understanding of this whole situation, as you'll see. Devin Nunez, fun fact, you got to mention this, he actually bought titles of nobility for himself from the Portuguese exchequer. Portugal has been a republic since friggin' 1910. By right of primogeniture, my late mother was a Portuguese countess, so I could be a count if I wanted to pay the Portuguese treasury for the honor. To give you the measure of the man, he is an impossibly vain fuck, besides the douche he already is as lickspittle in chief. To Drumpf. So, how are we supposed to address him? But what it boils down to is Nunez gets mentioned 48 times in the impeachment report. There's a comprehensive list of phone calls in the impeachment report. And it turns out Nunez is up to his eyeballs. Manu Raju over at CNN said Nunez could be tied to the effort to dig up Biden dirt. And again, still, I'm troubled by the language that's used. When you say to dig up Biden dirt, that presumes that there is some Biden dirt to be dug. We need our multimillionaire for-profit media to say plainly and simply that this was a conspiracy designed to get people not to dig up dirt on Biden, but to tell outright lies, absolute falsehoods about Joe Biden and his son. I mean, for instance, it's one thing to say that Hunter Biden was paid by Burisma for sitting on their board. That's undisputably factual. It is, however, a lie to say that there was something wrong or illegal about that. Because there wasn't. But Devin Nunes was a busy, busy little beaver with a bunch of contact with Rudy Giuliani, despite the role he was supposed to be playing as the ranking minority member on the Intelligence Committee. Let's see. Let's go back to April. God, we were just looking forward to the coming of spring, weren't we? Over the course of the 4 days following the April 7th article, phone records show contacts between Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Parnas, Representative Devin Nunes, and Mr. Solomon. More on Mr. Solomon in a moment. Specifically, Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Parnas were in contact with one another, as well as with Mr. Solomon. Phone records also show contacts on April 10th between Mr. Giuliani and Representative Nunes, consisting of three short calls in rapid succession, followed by a text message, and ending with a nearly three-minute call. Later that same day, Mr. Parnas and Mr. Solomon had a four-minute and 39-second call. And it goes on in that vein. Now, see, if you were to say that someone was trying to dig up dirt on Devin Nunes, that is not an unfair statement by comparison, because there is dirt. There is corrupt behavior. There is sleazy conduct, immoral, unethical, anti-American, anti-constitutional conduct. Remind me again why Katie Hill had to resign from Congress. Crazy number of phone calls between Lev Parnas and Devin Nunes. Many of them taking place on the very same day when Victoria Tenzing signed a retainer to represent Lutsenko, the corrupt former Ukrainian prosecutor. Well, now. And I mentioned we will get back to Mr. Solomon. Yeah, do let's. Because it's all there. This was a vast conspiracy. And we have no idea how deep its roots are going to run, even still. This is ugly business. And I'm trying to find where I tucked away the relevant story. Well, Joe Solomon worked for The Hill, and The Hill has a right-wing bent to it. There's no doubt about it. And he was up to his eyeballs in a conspiracy with Giuliani and the rest of those vicious, corrupt clowns. Jesus. Kind of makes your head spin after a while, doesn't it? Oh, and I said we were down to $49. We're down to $24, thanks to David in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you, David. Thank you so very much. $24, and we're done with fundraising for this third day of December. What shall we call him, asks Ron in Raleigh. First of all, Devin doesn't count for anything as far as I'm concerned. What shall we call him? I'll continue to call him a boot-licking jag-off and toe-sucking tosspot. Hard to argue with that. I think you've got the inside track there, Ron. Steve in New York, Joe Biden. I'm going to disagree with you here. Orange baby shit only cared about one thing, the announcement of some sort of investigation. He cares not one iota if anything actually happened. I understand that, but it would be the announcement that would then support his ability to tell lies. I think we can both be right on that one, Steve. Correction from Darlene in Connecticut, a vast right-wing conspiracy in the words of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Yeah, she has this way of being right about things. About the deplorables, about the vast right-wing conspiracy. And I remember how much shit she caught from the millionaires in the media way back when she said that. And it turned out to be, what? Yes, true. And Flavio lets us know that according to published reports, Lev Parnas gave House intelligence recordings of Trump and Giuliani. ABC News reported that it remains unknown what specifically is said in the recordings that include Giuliani and Trump, although Parnas' attorney, Joseph A. Bondi, would not comment on them. He referred ABC News to an official statement which said, Mr. Parnas has vociferously and publicly asserted his wish to comply with his previously issued subpoena and to provide the House Intelligence Committee with truthful and important information that is in furtherance of justice, not to obstruct it. By the time that all is said and done, regardless of the outcome of whatever the process is, this is going to make Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan's corruption rolled all together look minuscule, look modest by comparison. On the other hand, with the news out that Devin Nunes is up to his corrupt eyeballs in all of this, well, somebody decided to ask House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy about it. McCarthy said to reporters, doesn't raise me any concerns that the ranking minority member of the House Intel Committee was out there playing footsie with Lev and Rudy. That's who they are. It's just who they are. And we haven't even gotten to what's going on across the pond. Someone, probably Stephen Miller or maybe Sean Hannity, devised a strategery for Julius Geiser that involved him going to the NATO meeting and trying to start a row with Emmanuel Macron. Oh, there's the story on John Solomon. John Solomon was part and parcel, apparently, of the smearing of Marie Yovanovitch. Between April 1st and April 7th, Solomon was on the phone with Lev Parnas again. And also in that time frame, there were 16 different conversations between Parnas and Rudy Giuliani. April 1st and April 7th. And then, lo and behold, on April the 7th, John Solomon writes a column that gets published that claimed that Marie Yovanovitch was putting the kibosh on investigations into alleged corruption in Ukraine in order to protect Democrats. The report goes out. The day after that, Devin Nunes is on the phone with Giuliani and Parnas, and yeah, John Solomon. He had to leave the Hill, Solomon did, along the way, petulantly denying that he was part of a coordinated smear against Marie Yovanovitch, although that certainly does appear to be what the timeline indicates. He said he was just doing his job as an average day reporter out there covering 1,000 stories in the naked city. Or naked Ukraine, as the case may be. Where's John Solomon now, you might ask? Oh, come on. He landed where all these punk-ass, unemployable right-wing freaks land. He's a contributor on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Yes. Damn. But like I said, on the other side of the pond, we are being serially embarrassed by the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. He sat on a chair for a photo op, pissing and moaning like some sort of low-rent bill collector about NATO's payments into, or about the member nations' payments into NATO. Oh, that's a good point. Steve in New York points out, the John Solomon story has the feel of the Big Dick Cheney feeding lies to Judith Miller, the Judy Miller Show, who then wrote articles citing him as a source of what the administration was saying. Yeah, Judy Miller was, you know, she was the stenographer of the illegal, immoral attack on the innocent people of Iraq that claimed more than a million innocent Iraqi civilian lives. So anyway, Nitwit Nero decided to try to pick a fight with Emmanuel Macron, and then he tried to get into it with Justin Trudeau in the hopes that the maggots back home would think that he was somehow being tough. But he sits there on those ornate carved, the wooden carved chairs, and he looks like a little boy who's being punished with potty time. Pathetic. And hey, look at us, an hour into the program and we're done with fundraising for the third day of December. Thank you so much, Darlene. We're done. Thank you. Thank you very much. So he decided to piss and moan about impeachment.
Much more so than what you're suggesting.
Back to impeachment. Back to impeachment. Is it your belief now that there will be a Senate trial, sir?
I have no idea. I think they're making a mistake if they do that, but that's okay. They do what they do. I think it's a disgrace. I think the Democrats should be ashamed of themselves. If you look at impeachment.
Yeah, I love that. The guy who has never been faithful to a single woman to whom he's been married. A guy who brags about committing sexual assault anytime he wants to. A guy who leered at teenage girls naked in the dressing room at a beauty pageant. And this guy's talking about the Democrats should be ashamed. Then again, I guess he has no shame.
The word impeachment. Here there was nothing wrong, nothing done wrong. It was a perfect conversation with a very nice gentleman, the president of Ukraine.
If it was a perfect conversation, why does he not want the witnesses to the conversation to testify about how fucking perfect it was? Those are not the actions of an innocent man. Those are the actions of a crook who's been caught red-handed. Yeah, I mean, is there any other way to view it? Because I'm damned if I can figure it out. Yeah, well. Expecting coherence or lucidity from Nitwit Nero is like expecting Usain Bolt speed from a tortoise. Isn't it? Yeah. And so it wasn't enough for him to claim that there was something disgraceful in members of Congress honoring their oath. Oh, no. There was so much more.
They were both perfect. They were transcribed. They were both perfect. And this is what you're going to impeach the president of the United States on? The Republicans have never been stronger, never been...
Hey, dipshit. You might want to take that up with the Republicans. They're the ones who impeach somebody over a blowjob, and this is significantly more serious than that. So, right.
More unified. The Democrats have gone crazy. And you know what? They have to be careful. Because when the shoe's on the other foot, and someday, hopefully in a very long distant future, you'll have a Democrat president, you'll have a Republican House, and they'll do the same thing because...
I know. The 1990s were his sexual Vietnam, and he felt like he should get a medal for it. Yeah, that's real. But it already happened in the past. But his larger point that this is somehow just tit for tat, I hit you, you hit me, no. The similarities between the impeachment of Bill Clinton and the impeachment of this constitutional monstrosity, well, there is no comparison. Nancy Pelosi didn't want impeachment. Those were her public statements. She had to be dragged kicking and screaming to it. But once the president does impeachable things, if you take your oath at all seriously, you wind up having to go down this path. And so the question becomes one of, does he not understand? Is he that fucking stupid? Or does he damned well understand and ranting and raving is all he has left?
Somebody picked an orange out of a refrigerator and you don't like it, so let's go and impeach him. It's no good. That's not the way our country is supposed to be run.
This fucking idiot doesn't have the first idea of what's in the Constitution. Treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors. And yeah, a bribery scheme, which Ukraine was, which we were noting here before it was ever even muttered out in the mainstream multimillionaire media, is more than adequate grounds.
Mr. President, have you selected a new site for the G7 summit next year?
We really have, and I think it's been more or less announced. We're going to do it at Camp David, and we'll be doing some very special things at Camp David. It's nearby. It's close.
We're going
to give very good access to the press. You'll have great access. And we'll have a little bit of a Washington, I think, deliverance. We're going to have, but it will be at Camp David.
Deliverance?
Which is a place that people
have
your decision to leave Syria and leave the Kurds will affect NATO.
No, not only have we not left the Kurds, we're working with the Kurds. We have a very good relationship with the Kurds. And we've taken the oil. I've taken the oil. We should have done it in other locations, frankly, where we were. I can name four of them right now. But we've taken the oil, and that oil is what they lived off of. And that was going to be taken away from them. But now our great soldiers are right around the oil. We've got the oil.
Yeah, well, the Kurds die.
But if we didn't have it, they wouldn't be able to survive. The Kurds wouldn't be able to survive.
In the impeachment inquiry, you've maintained in a number of these sessions today that you've done nothing wrong in your conduct with Ukraine. Why won't you permit the Secretary of State or the acting White House Chief of Staff to testify?
Well, I would. I'd like them.
Yeah, that got Darlene, too. Whoa, wait. What did Trump say about picking an orange out of the fridge? Yeah. I think he knows that we all think that he's some sort of orange maniac. But that was his idea of demonstrating how ridiculous impeachment is. You know, you go to the fridge, you take out an orange, and you don't like it, so you say, let's impeach the president. Maybe it's also got something to do with the intellectual disconnect he's got going on. Maybe he really wanted to say you take a peach out of the fridge, and then, but the spirochetes wouldn't let him.
To testify, but these are very unfair hearings, and this gives these unfair witch hunt hearings. As an example, I just heard today, they get three constitutional lawyers. It's all nonsense. They're just wasting their time, and we get one. Okay. Now, nobody has to know anything about constitutional law, but they get three.
Well, there you have it. Nobody has to know anything about constitutional law. Of course not. You don't need to know anything about constitutional law if you're simply going to let the republic devolve into a dictatorship run by an intellectually damaged megalomaniacal, narcissistic dictator. Yeah, you don't need any He literally just pulled out a... Oh, God. He just pulled a line from Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Constitution? We don't need no stinking constitution. Isn't that where the badges, we don't need no stinking badges, comes from? Why would you not make a record of what the law is in regard to impeachment? Oh, but by the way, the witness list was released for tomorrow's hearing. It begins at 10 o'clock. The witnesses will be Pamela Karlan of Stanford, Michael Gerhart, and Michael Gerhart is a constitutional law and government expert favored by the Federalist Society. And yeah, Jonathan Turley. Really? Noah Feldman from Harvard, the Felix Frankfurter Professor of Law and Director of the Julius Rabinowitz Program on Jewish and Israeli Law. I didn't know that that was going to have a bearing on impeachment. The aforementioned Ms. Carlin. The Gerhardt dude comes from the University of North Carolina. Maybe he can show up in his Silent Sam t-shirt. And then Jonathan Turley, who really doesn't impress me much. Because, among other things, he's one of those people who has run around hooting and hollering about tort reform. And he's been seen on TV saying that he doesn't think impeachment will stick. Anyway, back to Nitwit Nero.
And we get one. That's not sounding too good.
Hey, dumbass. During the entire time of your presidency, when the House was held by Republicans every time there was a hearing, they got two witnesses, three witnesses, the Democrats got one. I saw it happen when Coal River Mountain Watch's very own Vernon Haltom appeared in D.C. to testify on the health effects of mountaintop removal, and the Republicans had three shameless, coal dust-covered, community-poisoning coal industry creeps there, and there was poor Vernon all by himself. Jack in Shreveport says, my brain took me to yikes when listening to the Trump clip. I couldn't help but think of some horror show playing out like the movie Deliverance using the setting of Camp David. I know. You can almost see him there at the G7 looking at Justin Trudeau and saying, sure do got a pretty mouth. Of course, I'm an excellent banjo player. It's because I've got such tiny banjo-playing hands. Squeal like a pig.
But that's the way it is.
Oh, and by the way, there went dinner in the Central Time Zone.
For the hearings, we don't get a lawyer. We don't get any witnesses. We want
What a dumbass. He was invited to send his lawyers, ask all the questions he wanted. He was invited to come himself. But he's claiming they don't get them. Funny how that works. The stupid.
We want the son. Hunter, where's Hunter? We want the son. We want Schiff. We want to interview these people. Well, they said, no, you can't do it. We can't do it. So when it's fair, it will be fair in the Senate. I would love to have Mike Pompeo. I'd love to have Mitch. I'd love to have Rick Perry and many other people testify. But I don't want them to testify when this is a total fix. You know what a fix is a fix. Just think of it. Tomorrow, I don't think anybody's going to watch. I'm not going to watch, but I'm going to be doing this. It's much more exciting.
I'm not going to watch.
He'll be glued to the screen. Hell, like I said, even the impeachment hearings of a couple of weeks ago, well, they actually got higher ratings than his last season of The Apprentice. I wonder if anybody told him that. Probably not.
It's fake news. I want him to testify, but I don't want him to testify unless the fix is in.
The projection is everything with him. He's always, always accusing the other side of things that he either has done or wants to do. So he wants
Rick Perry to testify. Trust me, Donald, you really don't want Rick Perry to testify. He wants Rick, but he only wants him to do it in the Senate. And if you heard last night's program, then you know that there's not going to be any live testimony in the Senate. None. Because God knows the Senate doesn't want that. Or rather, the Republicans in the Senate don't want that. No, no, no. But he wasn't done. Our intellectually damaged occupant, resident of the White House. No.
You know what? Tomorrow, think of it. They get three constitutional lawyers and we get one. That's not even smart, because it's not going to matter. And they take three and they give us one. Who ever heard of anything like that? No, but I want them to testify, but I want them to testify in the Senate where they'll get a fair trial.
What do we want to learn from Adam Schiff?
Told you.
From which?
From Adam Schiff.
I learned nothing from Adam Schiff. I think he's a maniac.
What would you want to learn if he testified?
I think Adam Schiff is a deranged human being. I think he grew up with a complex for lots of reasons that are obvious. I think he's a very sick man. And he lies. Adam Schiff made up my conversation with the...
What did I say about projections? I think he grew up with a complex. You know, like the daddy issues and the mommy issues that venereal Vespasian here has. Oh, yeah. We got complexes. I think he's a very sick man, says the sick man. He's a maniac, says the maniac. He's deranged, says the deranged guy. And see, that's the difference. There are reams of evidence of the disordered mind of Donald Trump, whereas there's no such evidence regarding Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff is businesslike, Adam Schiff is meticulous, and Adam Schiff has gone through this process arguably over solicitous of the Republicans and Marcus Aurelius there.
President of Ukraine. And one of the reasons people keep talking about it is that's what they saw. We have a perfectly beautiful 3 or 4 page transcription, and then in the other case, a 2 page transcription of the conversation.
With a whole bunch of words not included.
But a lot of people didn't read that. How many people called you? A friend of mine called up, a top person in New York called up. Great friend of mine, very successful. Gee, I didn't.
What the fuck does that even mean? A top person in New York. Does that mean they live in the tallest building? Does that mean they're in a kinky relationship and they're the top and somebody else is the bottom? The top person. They had to just Adderall the fuck out of him and then balance him a little bit to get him to something approaching normalcy. Yeah.
Like what was said, I said, oh, where did you see it? Did you read it? No, I didn't read it. I heard Adam Schiff give it. I said, well, that's not what was said. And I sent him a copy of what was said. He said, this is great. This isn't what he said. This guy is sick. He made up the conversation. He lied.
Because Nitwit Nero doesn't understand the concept of satire or parody.
If he didn't do that in the halls of Congress, he'd be thrown in a jail. But he did it in the halls of Congress.
No, no. No, he wouldn't be thrown into jail. Because First Amendment, political speech. But in the world that Geezer discussed us here wants to take us to, he might be thrown into jail. Because we've had almost 3 years now of this moron raving about wanting to imprison his political opponents. Not almost 3 years, more than 3 years, 4 years of it. He was ranting and raving about it on the campaign trail. Billable Rick. Trump's latest ramblings about oranges. It's evidence from Agent Orange's statements today that the Dems allegedly are trying to impeach him because they took an orange out. They took an orange out of the refrigerator and didn't like what they saw. Clearly shows that the ridicule that that Tangerine Tiberius has been exposed to by Americans is having an impact on him. It also shows that he knows he's unnaturally orange. Why didn't Trump instead use the example of an apple or a banana being taken out of the refrigerator? I rest my case. Yeah, that's I agree. I agree completely. Why not a kumquat? No, they're orange too. See how much trouble you can get in?
And he's given immunity. This is a sick person. He's a liar. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi knew he was lying, and she went on her show, Stephanopoulos, and she said he told the truth. So she was lying too. These people are...
Yeah, they were all lying, all of them, but I caught them. I caught them with the strawberries and the ice cream. Oh, if only we lived in a functioning republic instead of a dysfunctional one. Like I said, he tried to pick some shit with Macron. That didn't go over very well either.
Under lock and key, but many are from France, many are from Germany, many are from UK. They're mostly from Europe.
He's talking about people who fought with and for ISIS. Okay? Just to be clear. God almighty. Well, okay, who cares where they're from? You jag off. And here we go.
And some of the countries are agreeing. I have not spoken to the president about that. Would you like some nice ISIS fighters?
Yes.
I can give them to you. You can take everyone you want.
Let's be serious. The very large number of fighters you
have. You got that? The American embarrassment says, would you like some nice ISIS fighters in France? And Macron says, let's be serious. Because it was clear that Nitwit Nero was to try, well, he was, in psychological terms, he was acting out. And yeah. Every day with every breath, he embarrasses us. And whether it was alongside Trudeau or Macron, yeah, there's a certain primate quality to his posture. He kind of leans forward like you can imagine him doing while he's getting that first morning twoop of the day. And one individual. Well, we're the ones that coined the term orangutan. And his arms, if you see the video, his arms are swinging from side to side like some sort of... what? Some sort of anxiety-ridden zoo animal. Mike in Cascadia with a note. Adam Schiff runs marathons, lots of them, and he runs them well. You're right. He's meticulous, focused, ambitious, competitive, but he's not crazy and deranged like fuckwit Trump. The juxtaposition of Schiff versus Trump is a metaphor for all of us versus the Trumpanzees. Oh, and triathlons, too, he does, Mike tells us. Well, remember, the entirety of of Chlamydia Claudius's miserable life has been one of, it's been a string of petty jealousies as he desperately sought the approval first of parents that didn't much like him. And then the Manhattan wealth establishment that didn't appreciate his jumped up status. He wanted to be respected, if not as an athlete, then as an athletic supporter. Yeah, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. By owning an NFL team, he got shot down because even then, the NFL under, you know, I don't know, who was commissioner then? Would it have been Pete Rozelle? Knew he was a crook. So then he went over and fucked up the USFL. He wanted to be big in the gambling industry like the mob bosses he so admires. And he fucked that up too. I mean, if anybody ever got a chance to just look him in the eye and tick off his failures one by one by one, he would be in a piss-soaked heap by the time that individual was done. I hope they do call witnesses in the Senate. My money's against it happening, but I hope they do. And then I hope that there is one senator who will look squarely into the camera and say, Donald, I'm addressing you. And then meticulously point out what a waste, what a monumental waste of air and earth and water and space that horrible thing has been in its time on planet Earth. By God, I would stand up. I would stand up and sing the national anthem, do the Pledge of Allegiance, and sing America the Beautiful for that one moment. Who is that senator? Who has that kind of moral courage, moral strength, and moral authority? It would have to be a Democrat, because the list I just did, the strength, the courage, and the authority are entirely lacking on the Republican side. There's no doubt of that. Trump, Darlene says, is the master of projection and the master of disaster. Although I couldn't stop laughing today when I read that he referred to Chuck Todd's program as Meet the Depressed. Oh, he didn't come up with that by himself. But that is good. Oh, and Brother Deacon Asa pointing out as to the perfect phone call. I'll have you know that it was indeed a perfect conversation. Perfectly treasonous. Hear, hear. Clarity, meanwhile, says, stop trying to make me feel sorry for this orange menace, Bob. Stop trying to make us feel sorry for... I'm not! Clarity, maybe you have an overdeveloped sense of a sense of sympathy. There might be a cure. I don't know. Oh, very good. Wait a minute. Cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa. Been meaning to address this for a while. May I bring to the Horn Family Community Congregation's attention that TWOOP is something out of 2017, from back when we weren't quite sure what to expect from this asshole on a day-to-day basis? Since that time, tweeting from the throne has sort of become a routine conduct for this guy. Perhaps you might say it's his, wait for it, commodus operandi? Y'all, that's pro. That's beautiful. That's a two cowbell commodus operandi. Hugh, Asa, you practitioner of the art of word knowing you. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Charles. Thank you, Charles, so very much. Guess what? I've got great news about tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday. The deacons have only $100 to raise tomorrow, because Charles got us out in front of tomorrow's fundraising goal today. Thank you, Charles. Thank you a ton. That's awesome. And thanks as well to Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you, Todd. Todd with a message. Our leader sounds like he's in crisis again. I consider the word again to be superfluous, Todd. He just stays in a perpetual state of crisis. And frankly, he's been in it the better part of his life. Because again, he has never been truly, he has never known truly happy existence. Because there's always been one more thing for which he lusted. He's tried to replace the great vacuum inside of him with manifestations of material wealth. He is the walking, talking embodiment of what Plato ascribes to Socrates when he said that the unexamined life is not worth living. I had the same sort of thought. Ralphs said maybe Kamala Harris could stand up to recite Trump's faults. She would be a skilled one for delivering such a closing condemnation. James in Illinois suggests perhaps Patrick Leahy could deliver that damnation. Uh-oh. Oh, and James also pointing out the subject line taunting the French. He's going to ship ISIS to France over trade while dismantling NATO. Yeah. But at this point in time, it's kind of like what Asa said about 3 years ago in 2017. At this point in time, the heads of state in Europe know him all the way down to the ground. They know what to expect. They know who he is. They know what motivates him. They know every tin pot petty pissant dictator in the country or in the world knows that all they have to do is flatter him, and that he will jump to do their bidding. Ron in Raleigh says, "I call gimmick infringement. Master of disaster is Apollo Creed." Brother Deacon Asa, you'll probably be hearing from the lawyers. Oh, and by the way, Lady B, you got high praise from our buddy Reverbo. Reverbo noting earlier, talk about getting the big picture. Lady B delivered. Every time she hits send. Absolutely. writing from the blind, Dave says, remember, Bob, commode and comedy have the same Latin root. Lady B, on the other hand, says, Trump is like a Kardashian. Their vaginas would dry up and fall off if there wasn't a camera present. God. Say what you will about narcissists, at least it's an ethos. Draw blood. Ahoo! Yeah. Oh, and we're well past the halfway mark of the program, and I should probably mention that this is, in fact, Conversation Radio. If you've got something you'd like to get said, you're more than welcome to join in the conversation. On the stress line, that's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And it's all, let me check again just to make sure, because sometimes it falls apart. But, yep, we're all connected. We're all connected up with the stress line gizmo box and ready for your call. Over on Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn gets you through. Or 304-574-8178. It all, those two ring together. The stress line is separate. Okay. Let's move aside for a minute just to take into account a few other stories from out and about and around. Because other things are going on that aren't directly Trump-related, although if it's happening in the executive branch, it's shit rolling downhill from the, well, let's not ruin dinner in the mountain time zone just yet. For instance, the Appalachian Trail. You might recall that it was made famous when Mark Sanford claimed he was hiking it while he was engaging in some in flagrante delicto with a woman, not his wife. It's arguably the longest trail in the country. It starts in Georgia and finishes in Maine. One of the odd things about the Appalachian Trail is that, well, West Virginia is the only state in the Union that is entirely within the Appalachian Mountains. You know, you've got the seashore area of Georgia and the down south, hot and dusty of Georgia, but you've got the Appalachians up in the north, and Tennessee's got some Appalachia in it, but there's also Memphis. Alabama's got some Appalachia in it, but there's also the Black Belt and the Gulf Coast. West Virginia is the only state in the Union that is entirely comprised of Appalachia. And yet not one inch of the Appalachian Trail goes through West Virginia. How about that? Interesting, huh? Well, that's be that as it may. Oh, wait, this is good. So sad, says Flavio. Trump has never known love. He's always had to pay for it. And even what he paid for wasn't love. True, Flavio, true. But don't make clarity feel sorry for him. So there's litigation going on about the idea of putting another filthy, leaky, disaster-waiting-to-happen pipeline through Appalachia, and in this case, across the Appalachian Trail. It has been argued that the U.S. Forest Service has the authority to allow natural gas pipelines across the trail. That, according to lawyers representing the maggot regime in court. On the other hand, the standing idea is that that falls within the jurisdiction of the National Park Service, and only the National Park Service. This, of course, is upsetting the fossil fools and the lawyers who handsomely remunerated represent them, because the Forest Service will go, yeah, well, hell, you're going to dig it anywhere you want to. Fuck the trail. It all has to do with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And the arguments are ongoing. In a case going before the Supreme Court, that will be arguments which will be heard in February. The pipeline is a $7.5 billion project. And it's the first test case, the first shot across the bow with regard to the Appalachian Trail. Because there are other projects slated to cross it and thereby possibly toxify it in the wings. The maggot lawyers wrote in a brief, "Simply put, there is no basis in any federal statute to conclude that Congress intended to convert the Appalachian Trail into a 2,200-mile barrier separating critical natural resources, read money, from the eastern seaboard." In the lower court, however, they ruled that only the National Park Service can oversee the development. Now, why would this be important? They're both under the executive branch, right? Yeah, but they have different missions. And the perception is that the National Park Service construes things considerably more narrowly out of an abundance of concern for the well-being of the properties under its management. And what's if you go back to the enabling legislation as passed by the Congress that established the Appalachian Trail, you'll find that, jurisdiction was given by Congress to the National Park Service within the Interior Department. The National Forest Service is within the Department of Agriculture. And operating from the notion that it is easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, well, the Forest Service jumped out and granted a right-of-way for the pipeline thugs to dig up the trail under the Mineral Leasing Act. And this is all taking place on a portion of the Appalachian Trail in Virginia. God. As we watch for it to come up in February, it's U.S. Forest Service versus Cow Pasture River Preservation Association. Briefs were filed yesterday. The Cow Pasture River. I know exactly where it is. It's a beautiful area. So it's not just going to cross the Appalachian Trail. It's going to go under the Cow Pasture River. In western Virginia, in the midst of the Allegheny Front, are three rivers. The Cow Pasture River, the Bull Pasture River, and the Calf Pasture River. On one of my trips to D.C. one time, I made a point of stopping to see the Calf Pasture River. It runs right along a little two-lane road that you can get on it off of I-64, and it'll take you all the way to, via a series of roads, it'll take you all the way up to Harrisonburg, Virginia. It's a beautiful drive. I've made it several times. You know, the madness of zipping along on the interstate is put far behind you. And you drive through some magnificent scenery and some just breathtaking geology and geography. And I particularly wanted to see the cow pasture and the bull pasture and the calf pasture river because long about 1746 in Augusta County, Virginia, which is partly where the calf pasture river flows, a young man by the last name of Kincaid settled, having left Scotland on the run from the ever so sharp blades of the King of England. The Second Jacobite Rebellion had failed at Culloden, and the people who supported the efforts of Bonnie Prince Charlie to regain the throne, well, they could stay and die, or they could leave and try to live. Well, one of those who put wings to heel, or sails, more likely, more appropriately, was a Kincaid. And he settled on the Calf Pasture River in Virginia at the foot of the Allegheny Front. And he married, and he raised children. And he is my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great multi-great-grandfather. And for all I know, these assholes would just, hell, maybe they'll just put the pipeline right through his goddamn grave. They would, you know, because nothing, not history, not heritage, not a precious ecosystem, nothing outweighs money in the eyes of these capitalist punks who don't care what they do to the earth or what they do to the ability of the species to survive upon it, as long as they draw more wealth to themselves. We should probably note that I can't tell you what the pipeline's supposed to carry. I'm assuming that it's natural gas. It will come from the fracked pads of West Virginia and go to terminals on the East Coast in the hopes that eventually we will begin filling up liquid natural gas vessels to send our wealth to China, just like we've sent so many mountains in Appalachia, blasted and torn apart and ground into dust, to China. I've even walked in the Calf Pasture River. You know, I forget which philosopher, which Greek it was, who said that you can never stick your finger in the same river twice, because by virtue of the flow, it is constantly a different river. I mean, it gets all tied up in early atomic theory. It's really cool. But on one of our trips to D.C., I had already seen it, and I took, I stopped. There's a little park, a sort of nature preserve with a boardwalk through it. And Agnes was with me, and we stopped, and we walked the boardwalk, and we saw all these tiny little fingerling streams that run through a marshy place. We saw herons. We saw deer standing their heads. It was high summer, their heads just above the tall grass. No antlers yet. And we took a moment and we skittered down the little bank. And I stood in the shallow running stream that is the Calf Pasture River and thought of my ancestor and what it must have felt like to leave home. Home that you loved, and know that you would never, ever see it or the people you were leaving behind again. Profound. And so now, you know, it's not like it's just going to be a little hole in the ground. They're going to run a little 1 inch line. No, hell no. This is a massive monstrosity. And when it blows up, and it will blow up because pipelines blow up, not if, but when, all of that will be put at hazard for nothing more than the profit of people who live nowhere near it and have no intention of getting anywhere near it and wouldn't live near it if you paid them, because they know what they're doing. It sounds about right. Flavio says, you mean Heraclitus? Heraclitus? Sounds like the guy. James says, this is the storyline Outlander depicts, the natural extension of that Scottish rebellion. I could see where they were going, placing the show in North Carolina at close to 1750. We watched it up into that, and then somehow or another we just gave up on it. I think mainly because Agnes decided that she just despised the character of Claire. Don't hang that one on me. She just loathed Claire. But come February, they'll argue as to who has the jurisdiction to let a little chunk of Appalachia live or die. And money goes a hell of a long way. A long way indeed. But there is good news out there. You know, today was Giving Tuesday. And with the remaining moments there, I posted something on my Facebook page about Coal River Mountain Watch. I talked about it a little bit last night. I put up a donation link if anybody wants to help out. Because the work is far from over. The work, it's not even the beginning of the end. Understand that the more trouble the coal industry finds itself in, the more they will fall back upon practices like mountaintop removal and massive steep slope surface mining that relies primarily on heavy equipment and massive amounts of explosives. And as long as there remains an overseas market, well, they'll keep doing it until we stop them, and that's what makes H.R. 2050, the 8th Act, so incredibly important. And, of course, the AIC campaign is a project of Coal River Mountain Watch. But it's getting harder for coal. There's no getting around it. More and more insurance companies are refusing to insure coal-fired projects. According to The Guardian, the number of insurers who are refusing to cover such projects has doubled, more than doubled, in this year alone. And now U.S. companies are getting into the same, are doing the same. A new report says that Lloyd's of London and Asian insurers have become the last resort for fossil fuels, and particularly coal-fired projects. In the report, which was produced by the Unfriend Coal Campaign, that's a consortium of organizations like Client Earth and Greenpeace and my German friends at Urgewald. As the UN Climate Summit gets underway in Madrid, well, an insurance and climate risk conference is being held in London. And part of the reason that the insurance companies don't want anything to do with coal anymore is that there are, no one understands risk quite like an insurance company. And it is becoming more and more apparent that there are liability risks associated with the burning of coal that could conceivably come to humongous judgments for which insurers would be on the hook. So undergirding this report is the realization by insurance companies that their erstwhile clients are indefensible from a legal standpoint. And the report centers on the 35 biggest insurers in the world relative to what they do with fossil fuel coverage. And the report states that coal is on the way to becoming uninsurable, because you can't finance or build a coal project without massive amounts of insurance. Leading the way were European insurers, but two U.S. insurers, Chubb and Axis Capital, and the Australian firms QBE and Suncorp, have all said, nope, we're going to stop, or else we're going to severely restrict insurance for coal-fired projects. The amounts of money involved are breathtaking. 35 insurers with combined assets of $8.9 trillion. You wonder who's got all the money? That's who's got all the money. And that $8.9 trillion is only equal to about 37% of the insurance industry's global assets. Well, those 35 insurers have started pulling out of coal. And that is powerful. And only Lloyd's of London remains among the European insurers who are still willing to underwrite this filth. In an attempt to cut back on the negative PR that goes with being the last European firm to be willing to underwrite coal projects, some creep at Lloyd's said, "We take climate change extremely seriously and recognize the important role insurance can play in supporting, accelerating, and de-risking the transition to a low-carbon economy." Man, that is some word salad bullshit. That's almost as egregiously stupid as the billboard over in Beckley that says coal. Clean, carbon neutral, coal. It's still up. "Whilst Lloyd's Corporation does not set underwriting policy in the market, except if there is a specific legal or regulatory requirement to do so, we are nevertheless committed to building consensus across the 90-plus syndicates that operate at Lloyd's about how we make this transition." Jesus. But it's changing. And, well, coal will not go out with a whimper, but with massive explosions all over Appalachia that poison the communities and the families beneath them. Damn. So, by the way, I mentioned how Nitwit Nero is threatening France, and France today said, okay, y'all want to impose tariffs on French products? We can play that game. And the French economy and finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, told Radio Classique, we were in contact yesterday with the European Union to ensure that if there are new American tariffs, there will be a European response, a strong response. He continued and said, this is not the sort of behavior one expects from the United States with respect to one of its main allies, France, and to Europe in general. And, of course, part of the things, one of the reasons Nitwit Nero is angry is because the French decided to tax the compu-behemoths, Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon, for revenues that they earned inside France. Son of a gun! That's just horrible. A government actually taxing economic activity inside its own borders. That's what comes of a couple of generations of preaching that, what did Ronald Reagan say? Old 666 Ronald Wilson Reagan himself. The 9 most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. It's been a long and sickening, tawdry process of getting the American people to despise their own government, and by extension, despise themselves. I mean, why is it crazy for France and Britain to say that Apple and Google and Amazon and so forth have to pay taxes on revenues that they get inside the borders of the countries? And what kind of lunacy is it to suggest that they should be tax-free because their headquarters aren't within those countries? Nitwit Nero is talking about going after French cosmetics, French porcelain, French soap, French handbags, French butter, and cheese. Among the cheeses, Roquefort, Edam, and Gruyère. And sparkling wine. And they're talking about expanding the taxes into Austria and Italy. Jesus. Kind of hard to stock up on Roquefort and have it keep. I mean, it doesn't work. God, I love Roquefort. see, what happens is corporations are people, my friends, human beings. Corporations put their headquarters in places like Ireland, where they've been lured by the Irish determination that, well, the people of Ireland don't deserve to have the revenue that having a giant like Google would otherwise present. I don't agree. And see, this is one of those situations where if the world could speak with one voice, you wouldn't have these situations where corporations would run off to whoever was willing to fuck their own citizenry in the name of having some monstrous company inside them. Cynthia with a note. Brainwashing works, and a shitload of Americans are fucking brainwashed. Well, yeah, they are. And it wasn't accidental. This was a coordinated insurgent campaign against our own government, perpetrated by people within our country. Grover Norquist and Starve the Beast and Starve Government Until It's So Weak You Can Drown It in a Bathtub. And they come up with fucked up isms to give them cover, like libertarianism or conservatism. But at root level, all it is avarice. That's all. Robert in Australia, a billboard for coal? Years ago, when you could still advertise cigarettes, we had a group called Bugger Up, Bigger Up, who went around at night painting anti-smoking slogans and generally telling the truth about smoking on all the cigarette billboards. Bugger Up turned out to be a number of doctors from one of our larger hospitals. Yeah, around here you couldn't get away with that, Robert. Around here, no. Hell, you do that, you face jail time. Let's see, what's... note from Jim. He says, you spoke the truth on 2nd December. Whenever there is great power, be it made of finance, influence, financial or political, armed or peaceful penetration, discrimination, recrimination, and marginalization, is also the source of great error. The elements of the unpardonable sin are untreated illness, unalloyed poverty, destitution, and lack of genuine compassion. Veredictum. Gosh, that just sounds like us, doesn't it? Oh, I was wrong. Thank you, Speed. The Pacific Crest Trail is longer than the Appalachian Trail. I regret the error. Another piece of evidence indicating or proving just how hot it's getting for the Republicans comes, of course, from precious Lindsey Graham. Who, when last I checked on him, as he was cowering under the fainting couch down at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode, was whacked half out of his mind on cheap Shirley Temples. And in a positive dither,
about the upcoming IG report that says that, no, the FBI didn't do anything wrong. And no, they weren't spying on Nitwit Nero's campaign. They were pursuing an investigation of espionage. In fact, and it just seems so utterly hard to say delightful. But when Lindsay gives himself away on TV, he does everything but blink it in Morse code. Here he is talking to that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity job.
I just want to end with this one thought. If they're investigating my campaign, and they think somebody on my campaign is influenced by a foreign government, and they don't tell me, and they keep spying on my campaign, I would be really pissed.
Would you now, Lindsay? Reckon Lindsay's, I guess we're supposed to assume that he's speaking metaphorically on behalf of Nitwit Nero's campaign. But in light of Lindsay's weird behavior, and in light of the amount of money that we know that he got from the National Ruble Association, he might very well be wondering out loud if somebody knows more than they're letting on. So he's continuing to go down that road that despite what the IG is going to announce, that somehow the Nitwit Nero campaign was spied upon. Yeah. Well, today, somebody caught up with Lindsay and stuck a microphone in his face to ask Lindsay how he would feel about censure instead of impeachment. I've heard more of this being mumbled from day to day of late, and I kind of expected it. I can remember when they talked censure about Bill Clinton, and that's the trouble for Lindsey Graham. Every time he opines something relative to the impeachment of Donald Trump, there is something the exact opposite of what he is saying that came from the mouth of opposite Lindsey Graham back in the 1990s. Because I can remember when they said, well, hell, I mean, it was a blowjob. Just censure Bill Clinton and let's get on with it. You're not going to remove him from office. Just censure him. And the Republicans said, oh, no, by God, no, we can't do that. The flag's fallen. Oh, the Republic is at risk from oral sex of a consensual nature. Bill Clinton must be impeached. Ruger, ruger, harumph. But now, all of a sudden, Lindsay seems to think that maybe censure isn't such a terrible idea after all. Asked if he thought that censure would be better than impeachment, Lindsay said, well, who am I to advise my Democratic colleagues about what to do? Censure would probably gain some bipartisan support. The country going through an impeachment trial would be traumatic, and I think we should avoid that if possible. Anybody care to explain to me how the Constitution actually working as the Constitution was designed to work is traumatic? I mean, sure, I guess I can get my mind around it. It's kind of like talking surgery. When doctors describe the effects of surgery on the human body, they refer to the surgical process itself as an insult. It's a term of art from the medical community, a surgical insult.
Well, so too, I guess, if you attempt to cut a cancer out of our body politic, there's got to be a bit of a surgical insult there, too. But the only people for whom impeachment is going to be traumatic are, well, obese Otho himself, maybe Mike Pencilneck Geek, now that we know that he's up to his helmet hair in it, the maggots in the House and the Senate, who will have to stand up and defend an obviously criminal regime. But for the rest of us, there's no trauma. There's actually a patriotic stirring to see that maybe, just maybe, the mechanisms put in place by the framers and founders and ratifiers of the Constitution may yet save us. On the other hand, okay, when it gets to the Senate and the maggot senators in their majority decide to give him a pass, that'll be traumatic. Because that'll mean that the first part of the constitutional process worked, but that the Senate of the United States of America, the most dysfunctional governing body in our national history, has utterly, miserably, and what's worse, intentionally failed. And as much as I have spoken in favor of impeachment, I got to admit, watching that adipose jiggling wad of paranoia, insecurities, jealousies, and petty grievances do a victory lap after he's acquitted by the Senate is going to be fucking sickening. Is it to you? It's going to be disgusting. Revolting. Nauseating. Because we're going to be subjected to days and weeks and months of him and his toe-sucking sycophants declaring that he did nothing wrong. And that the Senate has proven it. Thank whatever. Well, no, I'm just thankful that we have this community so that hopefully we will be able to get ourselves through all of that with our composure and our serenity, at least nominally intact. Because Jesus Christ, that's going to be bad. And if I'm sitting here thinking that, what must it feel like to be an Adam Schiff or a Gerald Nadler or any of the other House Democrats who have poured heart and soul into this effort to save the Republic, only to watch a bunch of shit weasels in the Senate piss all over the Constitution of the United States. You tell me. I'm interested in what you have to say, as I always am. Subject line, victory lap. Lee in New York says, pound full POTUS, cannot do a victory lap unless he's in a golf cart. Yeah, okay. How about a victory glumph? It isn't something I look forward to. And I don't think it's going to be possible to drink or smoke it away. It's just one of those things where you have to live through it and try to endure it and move on from that to the 2020 general election and hope like hell, hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first, that we can manage enough unity to make him a one-term president. And then hopefully, once he's out, that there will be patriotic U.S. attorneys who will send him to prison for the rest of his unnaturally born days. Yeah, that's what it'll amount to, Lee. Lee says victory tweeting. Precisely. James in Illinois says, Lindsay just positively hates blowjobs. Lindsay, I just hate the taste of cum. Damn, James. Oh, God. But we could cinch him. What makes Precious Lindsay even think that Chlamydia Claudius would even accept a censure? You know how it's been reported that people dutifully try to keep him from finding out things that are out there that the rest of us read? Well, Ruth Marcus, known for being a conservative columnist at the Washington Post, has written a new book called Supreme Ambition, Brett Kavanaugh and the Conservative Takeover. Now, of course, Julius Geezer has already gone after the book. He's never read it. He won't read it. He can barely read. But he said it's fake news, badly written and researched, a disaster. But Brett Kavanaugh had better hope that nobody manages to let him know, him, Trump, know what's between the covers. Because Brett Kavanaugh is quoted as during the 2016 election cycle as having said he thought Trump was a buffoon. Brat, put down the beer. That's baboon, what you mean. On and on and on. Oh, and not touching directly on the White House, but certainly touching on the spirit and tenor of the Republican Party as it has become under Trump. Arthur Jones is going to run for Congress again. You remember Arthur Jones? Arthur Jones is from Lyons, Illinois, and he's running for the Republican nomination for the House in the 3rd Congressional District. He'll be running against Mike Fricciolone, or Fricciolone. Okay, so what? Well, like I said, it's his second run, maybe third, I don't know. But we know it's his, for sure it's his second. He got 26% of the vote the last time he ran. Okay, so it's an obviously Democratic district, and 26 is still a pretty thorough stomping. But it takes on more significance when you realize that Arthur Jones is a Nazi. Now, it's not like, oh, that guy's such a Nazi. No, Arthur Jones is a real-life, no-kidding Nazi. He's also, of course, a Holocaust denier. And the last time he ran for Congress, 26% of the voters in his district voted for a straight-up, no-kidding Nazi on the Republican ticket. The Republican Party tolerates Nazis on its side of the ballot. That's not hyperbole. That's fact. As he was running the last time, he said, for instance, that the Holocaust is an extortion racket, and that foods that are labeled kosher for Passover are part of a Jewish scam. And 26% of the people in that district voted for him, wanted to send him to Congress. Republicans. Am I making more of this than it should be? I don't think I am. I don't care what district, I don't care what state. If 26% of the people who cast ballots for a Nazi, we had damned well best pay attention. Remember, the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache did not achieve office by virtue of a majority victory. Oh, this guy's a real Lulu. He wants English to be America's official language. Oh, that'll bring in the Republicans every time, even though they can barely speak it. He also says, quote, any two-legged vagabond from any third-world non-white or non-Christian country is given preference whether they arrive legally or illegally. Either learn America's language, our culture, and respect our laws, or get out of our country. Gee, Arthur, maybe you'd just rather shove them in an oven, eh, bub? Oh, no, the Holocaust is an extortion racket. I never successfully got through statistics. I know a number of you did. You know how it goes with me and maths. But is it possible to extrapolate that 26% number more broadly? I mean, when GOP support for Donald Trump is north of 90%, even though they know that he participated in a felony to pay off women he had sex with who weren't his wife. Even though they know he brags about committing sexual assault. Even though they, Christian they, know that he wants little children kept in cages in concentration camps. They still support him. Thoroughly. Am I justified in worrying that a whole lot more of the Republican Party in the United States of America is like those Republicans who went to the polls in that district in Illinois and knowing a guy was a Nazi voted for the Nazi anyway? Because I don't have it in me to just say, well, yeah, that's just an anomaly. That's just a blip. I mean, that's just some weird shits what that is. No. And although it would be equally appropriate for tomorrow for prayer meeting Wednesday, this sort of fits in that inquiry. Over at Rolling Stone, there's an article by Alex Morris, titled False Idol, Why the Christian Right Worships Donald Trump. And for those of you who have either read the book or seen the series, The Family, you'll recognize some of this stuff. But at the center of the article is a recording. An audio recording of a meeting at Trump Tower, not that meeting at Trump Tower, but a meeting at Trump Tower in 2016 in September, between Trump and a whole shit ton of evangelical religion industry grifters. And in that recording can be heard the following. He would end the contraception mandate of Obamacare. He would select only anti-choice judges. He would do away with the Johnson Amendment, which prohibits tax-exempt entities from endorsing politicians. He would support prayer in school. He would oppose any bill that pulled funding from Christian schools that were charged with discrimination. He would keep transgender people from using the wrong bathrooms and locker rooms. And he would protect Israel, following the biblical pronouncement that nations that do so would be blessed. Obama's been the worst thing that's happened to Israel. And they were sold. And they signed up and climbed aboard the Trump train. Alex Morris points out in his article that around 81% of white evangelicals voted for him in 2016. Now, with current polling, 82% of evangelicals say they would vote for him if the election were held today. Two-thirds of them think he believe that he hasn't damaged the decency of the presidency. 55% agree with Sarah Huckabee Sanders that God wanted him to be president, and 99% oppose impeachment. Let that sink in, too. They were discussing HB2, that nasty ass hate bill in North Carolina, the potty bill, in which Republicans became so thoroughly obsessed. You remember it, over where people go pee pee and poo poo. And Nitwit Nero was trying to sort out who could go to the potty when and where. And he asks the religion industry grifters, with the operation or without the operation? Because he wasn't sure if HB2 would apply to somebody who had already had confirmation surgery. That's when Frank Turek, a Christian radio, talk show creep, said, without the operation. If you're a man but you feel like a woman that day, if you're Shania Twain, you can go into a woman's bathroom and no one can say a word about it. I had no idea. Shania Twain, really? And as Alex Morris writes, Trump seemed to ponder this deeply. For much of his political run, the thrice-married, swindling, profane, materialistic, self-styled playboy had appealed mainly to the more fringe elements of Christianity, a ragtag group of prosperity gospelers like Paula White, Christian dominionists who think that America should be run on Old Testament laws that include throwing rocks at gay people until they die. And charismatic or Pentecostal outliers. But this brought them aboard the more mainstream evangelicals. And it has kept them along ever since. Because you see, people like Robert Jeffress, the shyster from the First Baptist Church of Dallas, was there. And they bought in and stayed bought in. When Trump walked into the room, he said, what a group of people. This is serious power. Fantastic. I don't even know if I've ever seen this. And that's when they laid out all of that shit about all the social, religious bigotry that he would support if they would support him. They made jokes about the baby Jesus. Trump said, are you allowed to use the word Christmas? Is there a restriction on the word Christmas? And one of the religious grifters there said, as long as you don't refer to the baby Jesus as a he, his preferred gender pronoun that day, that's what you have to use. The Heritage Foundation was there. Oh yeah, all the usual suspects. Cynthia says, our dear leader is Jesus Trump, for the evangelicals have told us so. Vomiting and retching my guts out. Sorry, but this is just where we are. Flavio with a great line. I hate Illinois Nazis. The Blues Brothers, one of my all-time favorite movies. Mine too. As to extrapolating data, Lee in New York says, you can, but you need more numbers. If the district is heavily Republican, then the minority of Republicans voted for a Nazi. If the district is split, half Republicans probably support Nazis. If the district is two-thirds Democratic, the Republicans overwhelmingly back Nazis. That's the thing. It is a safe Democratic seat, Lee. And I think it's safe to say that those Nazis, that those Republicans have a close identification with Nazis.
James in Illinois. First wife, Ivana, self-described first lady, melanoma being the third lady, said that the Don kept a copy of Mein Kampf next to his bed. Yeah, that came from their divorce proceedings. And the whole thing got, well, it got nailed down, sorry, Jesus, when Robert Jeffress made his closing argument. What I want to say in closing this election is not a battle between Republicans and Democrats. It's a battle between good and evil, light and darkness, righteousness and unrighteousness. This is the last chance we have, I'm convinced, as a country to turn this country around. And understand that that Southern Baptist meant by turn this country around, make this country a fascist hellscape. And what's fascinating is that Alex Morris, writing this article, notes that he was, like I was, raised in conservative Christianity. So he knows what a profound impact this has on the minds of the believers. A few minutes left in the program. Let's run over to the phones and see who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, wrong button. Sorry. There you are.
It's Rudy Rudy.
Hey, Rudy Rudy. What's going on, man?
I just wanted to, by the way, a wonderful show. You know, well, we need you. You're our leader right now. I'm as disgusted as you are. I just heard that the United States is 126th in literacy. We're behind Burundi and Botswana. Yeah.
In literacy? Yeah.
In literacy, yeah. 126th.
Well, let me cue up the Lee Greenwood. And I'm proud to be American.
Okay, you know, where I'm at, this is Magnet Central. And I listen to Alex Jones every day because I have to, you know, to know what these guys are thinking. And this guy's gone off the rails. He, have you ever heard of this idiot called David Ickles? I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's British. He believes in a reptile, you know, the human alien hybrid lizard people.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. He's one of those Alex Jones types.
Yeah, he was on Alex Jones today.
And, of course he was.
Alex Jones told me something that I thought it was different than what he said, but Alex Jones said that it's always been the left that has persecuted the Jews. It's always been the left. Now, I thought it was always the right.
Well, you were thinking they were lying.
I know that this is I shouldn't say this, but if anyone gets a chance to listen to that, the first half hour of Alex Jones' show every day, you should do it. Just see how fucking whacked out this fucker is.
Like I was talking earlier about extrapolating, you can extrapolate that crazy onto some portion of the American people, because Alex Jones would not be a millionaire and would not be heard the way he's heard if there weren't people who thought like he thinks.
Well, he's the preacher he just talks really fast and throws a bunch of shit there. I'm smart enough to see what he's doing, but I just imagine these, the illiterate people that are listening to him, they think he's fucking brilliant. And he just spouts out a bunch of lies all over the place, and he's the most dangerous man in America because he's got a really big audience. And he tries to come across like, this is the final war. This is the final battle. It's them against us, because we're the enemy. You know that.
Right. And it can't help but be dangerous down the road for one side to be defining the other as enemy. I've been doing this. I know. But Rudy, I've been doing this for a while. And I can talk about opposing their policies and I can talk about how crazy they are. But I don't talk about them in terms of being a military enemy. They talk about us that way. They would like to see us dead.
Because we're socialists, we're communists, we're rubber.
Well, I mean, you can use any term that you want to, but it is because we are in their way. We are preventing them from turning the United States into a fascist theocracy, just like Iran, only with Jesus.
And they claim that we are turning it into a fascist, just like...
Right, but that's the projection we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. And I hate this fucking guy. And I know people that listen to him religiously. Bob, I think this country's being taken down by people that are 35 years old and younger. The people that grew up on video games and never learned any skills as far as being a human being and interacting with people. And they have, because I run across these youngsters and they talk just like Alex Jones talks. And, anytime somebody uses the word boom or LOL, I realize you're a young idiot. But they've got the vote too.
Well, look, I'm not willing to cast damnation on any one particular group, Rudy, because, well, I've got too much evidence of too many fucking boomers out there fucking us over too. So I don't think you can hang it on a particular demographic. I think it has much more to do with basic intelligence and the ability to think critically. Does that make sense?
And Matt Caidi, he used to be one of the good guys. He's a fucking, he's over there with Jimmy Dore. Matt Caidi's a piece of shit now. It's a joke. The Republicans couldn't possibly get helped by the Russians, as he says. We've got millions of people working on this thing. We've got the evidence, and we can prove it, and all he has to do is say, fake news.
Rudy, it all comes down to capitalism. Because there's good money to be had among the Russia did nothing wrong, Putin is a sweet, lovable, huggable old granddad who wouldn't hurt a fly, that silly shit. Jill Stein didn't run for president because she wanted to do anything for the country or because she thought she could win. She ran for president because running a third-party campaign is a great fucking hustle. You come out of that a lot better than you went in it.
Just like Tulsi Gabbard's going to do it this time.
Yeah. I mean, I find it fascinating that Kamala Harris got out of the race, but Tulsi's staying in, and she doesn't even have Kamala's numbers.
Yeah, but Tulsi's got an open invitation on Fox whenever she wants it. So there's that.
Right. Again, capitalism.
I listened to this weird show called Tulsi Gabbard is a fascist. The guy that runs India, Modi.
She's a fan.
Connected to the party. She likes Modi, and Modi's party is directly connected to the people that killed Gandhi. And the big hero is a Mussolini. I'm not kidding. India is the largest democracy in the world. It's kind of fascist right now.
Well, that's the problem. Democracies are always essentially fragile. They must be jealously guarded, and most people don't want to take the time to do that.
Well, I'm going to let you know that I went at your gun show, and I got my own AR-15 because these guys, everybody's got one. I've actually given the guns that I've collected when I was a kid. I've given them to old ladies in the Democrat club because they wanted one, they didn't have one. So I just gave, I've given away 17 guns so far. Even took them out, even took them out to the desert and showed them how to shoot them because these people are going to start killing us, Bob. I hope I'm wrong, but they really want you. They really, really want you. Bob, I'm going to just tell you one more thing. You're going to quit the tobacco good because you have to, because we need you. Don't you dare get sick on us, motherfucker. We need you. I love you. Bye.
Thanks, Rudy. Take care, man. I'm going to work on it. Later. That's our buddy Rudy. Rudy calling from Arizona. And that's the end of the program. Very nearly a three-hour filibobster. I have happy news to report tomorrow. Hell, the deacons are on the way to just having the damn night off. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul, for jumping in this evening. That means we're down to... Paul has taken us down to only $75 to go for tomorrow. God, the deacons are going to be unbearable. We may have to install treadmills down in the fellowship hall just to keep them mobile for the evenings when we've got a regular fundraising goal. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. I cannot thank you enough. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks for getting the podcast Dumaflachi working again. Thank you so very much. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And there are a few hours left, at least in the, well, more than a few in other time zones, but in the Eastern time zone, there's a few hours left of Giving Tuesday. Maybe give some thoughts to running over to my Facebook page and chipping in a sawbuck or a fin to Coal River Mountain Watch for the work that they do. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.